Chapter 1. County of Aurea, formerly Central Washington. High Kingdom of Montauval, formerly Western North America. October 30th, change year 25, 2023 AD. Rudy had been inclined to think the final ball a waste of time and resources. One of the peacocking associate habits that he had to put up with for the sake of harmony, and which the North Realm nobles insisted upon even on the eve of battle. And perhaps there was an element of sheer vanity in it. But on second thought, who should say how a man prepares his innermost self to die? Or a woman, sure. They have to be here. And the most of their ladies, too, for they're working in the field hospitals, or managing the supplies, or something of that sort, waiting for their lovers and brothers to be brought back on their shields. The only real burden is that they've brought their party clothes. Garb, they call it, along this far. And we're close to the river. There's a certain mad gallantry to it, a defiance of fate. My foster father says the Duke of Wellington's officers did the same thing on the eve of Waterloo. Torches and fires of pine wood and iron cages, and strings of softly glowing paper lanterns, lit the interior of Castle Goldendale's Bailey Court, the broad paved expanse at the heart of the inner keep. The great hall and the chapel and the quarters of the seneschal and his officers surrounded it in an irregular circuit of roofs and balconies, spires and pointed arch windows. Candles glowed in the church, through the rich colors of stained glass, wrought-in saints and angels. Matilda and some others had had their mass there, though most of the hosts had used household chaplains and field priests in the encampments. A lingering scent of incense mingled with burning conifer sap and the cool night air. Sparks drifted heavenward. The narrower slits of the solars and guardrooms and the high round towers of the keep were bars of yellow against the half-glimpsed soaring heights, as much sensed as seen where their dark bulk blocked out the stars. Folk more humble crowded some of them. The castle staff, maidservants, and men-at-arms, watching the gaudy flower-petal brightness below as a show arranged for their entertainment. Black-armored spearmen of the Protector's Guard stood at intervals around the enclosure, motionless as statues of gleaming dark metal, with the visors of their sallet helms down, and leaving nothing to be seen but an occasional glint of eyes behind the vision slits, the gleam echoing the yellow and scarlet of the lidless eye on shields, like 4-foot elongated teardrops. Kilted longbowmen of the High King's archers shared the duty, and honor, with their great yew bows in the crooks of their arms. The walls enclosed the sound of the players as well. Shawm and lute and recorder and viol. The sweet tinkle and buzz and fluting notes of Portlander court music. The tune ended, and the dancers turned and bowed or curtsied to politely applaud the musicians on the dais. Several of them had the jeweled dagger that denoted associate status, or even the golden spurs of chivalry on their heels. For a troubadour might be a gentleman by protectorate standards. The tale of the dance would be woven into that of the battle to come, for they'd be fighting in it, too.
5 minutes, the mistress of the revel said. She was Dame Lilianth of Calama, who did something administrative for the Grand Constable most of the time. Then the Knights of Portland, gentlemen, chevaliers, demoiselles, and ladies.
Her shrewd eyes took in the situation, and she made an almost imperceptible gesture. Everyone except the two nobles with whom he'd been talking business withdrew enough to give a degree of privacy as Matilda came up to him. She was wearing a dark chocolate coat hardie with tight sleeves that showed rounds of her pale flesh between each button, and a headdress with two low peaks in warm, dark gold silk and pearls. It made a striking contrast to the tone of her sleek brown hair, where it showed at the side.